This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel Goes, the Marvelous Mrs. Maisel Goes,
the Marvelous Mrs. Maisel Goes, the Marvelous Mrs. Maisel Goes, the Marvelous Mrs. Maisel Goes, the Marvelous Mrs. Maisel Goes, your lunch. Give us your lunch and we'll eat it all.
We're hungry.
Sorry.
We're hungry. We're give us that lunch, a marmalade sandwich.
And I am a unicorn, and I also live near the bridge.
Not under it,
but near it.
And I am a great wizard, and I'm non-binary, gendered.
Welcome. I have another story. I'm a different podcast. Tune in some other time. I don't know
Welcome
why.
To the Marvelous Mrs. Maisel Goes. I'm Kevin.
And I'm Alice.
And we're
the Maisel Goes.
Maisel Goes. Maisel Goyim. Maisel Goyim is also a plural of Goys.
Is it?
Yeah.
I've
of Goy, I
research.
Should say. Yeah. Well,
we're in, here we are, episode section. 4, and there's no backing out now.
Halfway through. Wait, did you think I was going to back out?
No. Did you think I was going to back out? Yes, you did. Okay. And we
You're
are moving.
You're a busy lady. There's a lot of stuff going on.
I have realized the amount of podcasts that I can actually do on a regular basis.
Isn't that funny?
And it is below 3.
Yeah.
And I'm at 3 right now. So
yeah.
It
yeah.
is.
Well, that's what's so lovely about this is that it's not 52 episodes a year, right? It's 8 episodes
Thank you.
A season.
That's true. Yeah.
Is if Amy was like, you know what, season 2, we're doing 52 episodes, I'd say, Alice, I don't think we can do this.
I don't
think
so. Hell no.
Hey, sorry.
L, no, do the no.
Correction section time. The correction section.
Yeah, so when we do that, that'll be what the... But we'll wait till our guest
is with us,
right, until we do that.
Sure. Let's introduce her right now. Ooh, that's loud. I'm sorry.
I just back away from the microphone as the battle.
Folks, she is an actress. She is a comedian. You may know her from such films as Hail Caesar or such HBO experiences as Mosaic. Ladies and gentlemen, give it up for Veronica Osorio.
Veronica Osorio de Caracas.
Welcome.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
It's like I'm home.
It's crazy.
Now,
Dude, it's like I'm seeing you with another man.
It's true.
It's weird.
For anyone that for some reason would know, Veronica is Alice's co-host on her mistress podcast, Treks in the City. Or is this the mistress podcast?
You're the mistress podcast.
I'm so sorry.
It's
Penny.
It's a short, I'm the Penny
the
Pen.
You're the Penny.
That feels right
it's
to
short-lived.
Me.
I'm
Mitch.
Unfortunately.
That's right.
Well, Veronica, thanks so much for joining
us. I'm Joel, I guess.
Hey.
I like
yeah,
it.
You're Joel. Oh,
it's great.
I, you know, I like it.
Because you love Joel. Wait, do you love Joel?
I do. He's an idiot.
Wow.
He's an idiot.
Well,
girls
Once you
love
hear
Joel.
Her story, it'll make sense that she loves Joel.
He's a sweet idiot.
You have a story.
Well, there's a little bit of a story. I don't know what Alice is referring
no,
to.
No, I'm referring to how you're converting.
Oh, yeah.
For the men. No, I was explaining this to somebody the other day.
This is the worst because I consistently over-explained that it's not for a guy, and Alice introduced it in a way that it
I got real
somehow
muddled,
accidentally
real quick.
I feel like there's some sort of kismet to it, but I do believe it'll play in your romantic life at some point. But at the same time,
wow,
you know,
like that.
I feel like your entrance into Judaism is a romantic thing in a way, but it isn't necessarily romance as in finding love with another person. You have an actual romance with the Jewish religion.
Yeah, I do.
Oh, I love that.
That's how beautiful. You feel about it. Like I was explaining to Garrett, I was explaining to my boyfriend, I was like, about your conversion, I was like, he's like kind of confused about why you would do it. And I was
right.
like, yeah, but like when you talk to her about the way she feels about it, when she talks about Judaism, it makes sense for her. Like, I get it when she talks about
it. So just
it. So
to
that's
be clear,
the kind of thing that.
Just to recap and to be clear.
Okay.
You are independent of any other person in your life. You yourself as an individual converting
generally,
to Judaism.
Yes. Me on my own.
Yes.
The hardest part is first, like, that people don't understand that. And second, then, like, me alone at temple, I have to approach other mm-hmm. people and be like, hello. Because they're all wondering.
Oh, yeah. No.
There's no ring or anything. So it's
sure.
like, it's, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's so interesting.
It's been wild.
So that's your background with Judaism.
Yeah, yeah.
And your future with Judaism.
Mm-hmm. My future, for
Now let's
sure.
talk about the marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
Oh, my God.
And your past background and future with this show. You love this show.
Yeah, I love this. I love this.
Yeah.
I'm really loving it. I already watched the entire show, and I want to, like, rewatch it.
Now, how does it resonate with you as also a woman Ooh. In comedy?
I was thinking about, at first, I was a little annoyed that people would be like, because I didn't know, I watched the pilot when it came out at some point, and I loved it. And mm-hmm. I was wondering if it was going to go to a show, and then it did happen, and immediately, yeah. From the moment I found out it was out to, like, the awards, it was so quick.
Yeah.
Oh, totally.
So when I started watching it, I was like, now I'm going to be annoyed that everyone's, like, producers are going to be like, oh, women had it really hard. And then it's going to be like, oh, no, we still do. And then yeah. they're going to be like, yeah, but think about her. Like, it's harder with, like, then.
Yeah.
And I immediately first got mad because that's my best reaction. And then,
right.
You know, it's the best way I can approach things because usually I'm like, oh, yeah, yeah. And then 2 months later, I'm like, oh, that was awful. So now I flipped it to think terribly. And I was, but at the same time, so that was my first reaction. That was like a little animal instinct, I guess.
Well, I kind of think I know what you're saying. Like when you watch something or you know something's coming out and you see who's involved, you like already are mad because you're not involved in it. Like that's happened to me so many times as an actor and a comedian. I'm not writing on that.
That's not what I said.
Oh, well, then I'm taking a completely different tack. But like, you know, people were auditioning for Maisel. I didn't get to audition, all this mm-hmm. stuff. There were no parts for me to audition for.
Sure.
So that makes sense as to why. But
you could be Susie.
You could be like Imogen.
But then I would not be able to see the fabulous
Alex Borstein.
Alex Borstein.
And they wrote it specifically for her, so you probably couldn't have been
I
Susie.
I couldn't have been Susie.
Susie.
But, and then you watch something out of spite, and then you love it. Like, that's happened to me before, where I'm like, like, I watched Broad City out of spite,
and then
I loved it, you know? Because, like, I had a friend who was going to write on it, and I wanted them to be on it, and I was mad and whatever. You know, you just get really... You get stupidly loyal about certain things and
sure.
stupidly, yeah, like selfish about certain things.
No, I was just worried that people were going to think, oh, you don't have it hard anymore because that was way harder.
Right.
Like women have it easy
But is it
now.
Even though I actually feel like it's easier and I think especially in this episode, I feel like it's easier for her than it should be.
Oh, yeah.
It's not hard
for
too
her.
Much in this app. No.
Like, she really like doesn't struggle very much.
It's just sweet, you know, like flight through through things in
sure.
a way. Like, in one night, they went to see a bunch of, like, in this episode. I don't know if I can start talking.
Yeah. Yeah.
But in one night, they just, like, go see a bunch of different shows.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, everything's, like, easy. Like, okay,
yeah.
this is your night of school. But at the same time, she's extremely talented. So maybe that has to do with that.
Like, they were talking about some of the issues that black people don't face on the show that are unrealistic of there was a journalist who we quoted last week. But it's just kind of a rose-colored glasses view of, like, what it was like to be a person in the 50s. Like,
Thus far,
you know?
Yeah, and a little bit that's the character because she comes from kind of that life. Like, clearly...
Very privileged.
Yeah, they come from money. They're by Central Park. Like, that was nothing I could have ever... imagined while I was living in Manhattan.
Sure.
So I was like we were all street rats. So
literally, you were like singing little street rats.
Literally, like carrying.
You got turned into a human later.
Tunnels.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We were just kind of at that point. I feel like when I was in New York, I mean, I was like one step ahead of the bread line, you know. And it was in a way, it was like one swing ahead of the sword.
Sure. Whoa,
yeah.
Whoa.
One,
you know?
Oh my
but
Lord.
How many sword swings are there you know? In a fight?
That is such a good proverb. How many sword swings are there in a fight?
Do you guys know what I'm quoting?
Think about it.
If you know what I'm quoting, listeners at home.
Hashtag
it.
Hashtag it, just hashtag it.
Hashtag it. You figure it out.
I think thought they were going to get, the other guests were going to catch on, but... They didn't. So it's all
we're both just other
guests
in the Alice Wetterlin
in
show.
In my yeah, that's correct. It's the way it is at all times.
This is episode 4. This is the disappointment of the Dion quintuplets, written and directed by Amy Sherman-Palladino. Mm-hmm. And the Amazon synopsis is, Midge begins to move on from her once perfect life. Mm-hmm. Susie shows Midge the ropes while going on a tour of New York comedy clubs. Yeah, Rose takes a bit too much pleasure in Midge's new living arrangements. And we're going to kick it off with a little segment that we do every episode called
12 o'clock rock, we're going to
pop
around
the culture
tonight.
This is the segment in which we take every pop culture reference in the episode and put them in a supercut. This is episode 4, The Disappointment of the Dion Quintuplets.
When I make it big, if I'm still hanging with you, I'm going to have Dorothy Dandridge beat me to death with Otto Preminger.
I was as sober as the next guy. Unfortunately, the next guy was Dean Martin.
The Dion Quintuplets would be very disappointed in you right now.
It wasn't Buddy Hackett, was it?
Have you ever been around Ethan when he can't watch Howdy Doody because it's
Ethan.
Terrible?
Tubby the Tuba, Woody Woodpecker.
Jane who?
Jane Jacobs.
Yes. Who is Jane Jacobs?
Never heard of Jane Jacobs.
And I can watch Jack Paar in there at night.
You know, I read in the paper that Senator Kennedy is going to run for president.
It's Liberace. It's magic. And he's safe.
Not my type, Mama. I do, however, see Mitzi Gaynor as mentioned.
Well, come on. She's adorable.
Your Mort Sauls, your Ernie Kovacs, they're great.
As long as you have Bob Newhart's album.
You ever heard of Joe Louis?
Oh, my God. When Richard Milhouse Nixon becomes president, we move to France.
A red fox. Never heard of it.
Oh, you will. Red Skelton's headlining tonight. You know Red Skelton?
Saw him on Steve Allen once.
Mark Twain presenting at Royal Albert Hall 1904.
Bing Crosby sings Mother Goose. I had such a thing for Bing Crosby when I was little.
Really? So oily looking.
No, he's not.
Like, if you got on top of him, you'd slide right off.
Never watching White Christmas again.
Damn. So to me, this was the episode that came closest to the thing you see in, like, jukebox musicals or biopics or anything like historical where they're like,
yeah.
Oh, who's that guy?
Oh, yeah.
You know,
it was very
John
musical.
F. Kennedy. Yeah. He'll never be president, you know,
big.
Where it's like, but he will be like, yeah. Richard Nixon. He's not going
to
be
very or, mugging to the audience.
Yeah. Red Fox. You're going to know Red Fox. Like a lot of them.
But the Kennedy thing was really, or the Nixon thing was really like, okay.
That's putting a hat on a hat.
Liberace.
On a lampshade. Yeah. Although, you know, I feel like they might have talked about Liberace that way back then.
They definitely did.
I like that wink to that. I think that was the most impressive to me because the other one's kind of like, I don't even like hear pop references sometimes. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But it's not because I don't know them, but because I don't care. It's just whatever.
Just kind of just dialogue pepper.
I'm kind of cool like that.
Yeah, it's like dialogue
pepper.
Yeah.
I like that. It's a little spice on top of what they're saying.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, I don't love it, but it's okay. I'm deaf to it.
You don't have an allergy to it. Your taste buds are numb.
Like, yeah. I remember when you were first telling me that you watch Maisel and, like, that your reaction to... I remember you specifically being like, it's a little... And I, like, knew what you meant. You were, like, kind of had this look on your face, like, it's a lot.
Yeah.
It's a lot. Like, it comes at you and the dialogue is very, like, you know, it's Aaron Sorkin-y. It's very pitter-patter.
Relentless.
It's just a little tacky.
Yeah.
In a
campy.
Campy.
It's campy.
Campy. Campy.
Winky.
Mm-hmm.
Hammy.
I love all of these dwarves, by the way. Campy, Winky, and
campy,
Hammy.
Campy, Winky, and
were
Hammy.
We're for sure the best three.
See, yeah, it is true. But I did like that typewriter machine bit. Like, they stayed with it for a second because I was like, this is actual talent that I just didn't know exist. Like,
oh, when they showed Liberace playing the typewriter.
Right. And I was very impressed by it, and I'm glad I saw it ever at some point in my life.
Yeah,
it's kind of an interesting parallel with the typewriter situation that Susie's going through.
Oh, that's right. And then they cut on it.
Interesting. The relationship between people with money and no money. Like,
yeah.
A little bit that's like, oh, it's a show. We can use a typewriter to do clink clink.
It's just for fun.
And then she's like, I'm missing 7 letters. Which I love.
Yeah, so the show opens with guys, a pretty gorgeous montage.
Gorgeous. Oh. It looked like a musical.
Of the Maisel apartment. Happy Days Are Here Again, showing from the first move-in to Chinese food on the floor to Ethan and Esther being born to game night. It was gorgeous.
And this is Babs?
This is Babs. Yeah. They got 2 Babs songs.
I mean, this
got Babs, and it's like, it's exactly appropriate because, don't know, this is, in this... This is like a little before she makes like Funny Girl.
Sure.
Yeah. So it's like...
And not racially problematic like the last Barbra Streisand song we had to listen to on this show.
Oh, really? What was it?
In Old Peking.
Oh.
Yeah.
I'll Google that.
Really? I mean, I was kind of knocked out by this montage.
I was very... I cried.
Because it doesn't...
The colors.
I've never thought of Amy Sherman-Palladino as a technically excellent director. You don't think like, oh, yeah. Wow, she's like, you know, some people like Brian De Palma really just runs it. Around like with that. The camera until he runs out of film. But this was just like gorgeously done and not without purpose. Like the way it blended into each of the frames and the door becomes the door when they walk in. And
that made me so happy.
Yeah.
I love the idea that Amy Sherman-Palladino is, because we've been with her for such a long time.
Such a long time.
Gilmore Guys and all this. Right.
Stuff. I feel chained to her.
I know you do. And I love the idea that she has never really been seen as like a technical... And then for her to just be like, oh, yeah, I can whip this out any time.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah, I can do this.
I mean, that's a budget,
I mean,
too.
She has the money to buy Barbara. So she has to, like, honor.
I think that's what it's all about.
Having that song right there.
You like, see how stifled she was by a lack of a... of a big wallet before.
I mean, I can see that.
Yeah.
Also, like, the colors are so perfect. Her, like, pink, beautiful, new life versus, like, that
the cold,
dark,
gray winter.
Beautiful winter blue.
Totally.
And the entire episode was kind of like that. Like, when they were eating fries and everything's, like, lit in the back and she's purple and she's too. And every club was so beautiful.
There's so many...
mad. In the Copa, like, so this guy is like, tuku, tuku, tuku. You know, like that cool, like, Latino, like Lou Vega is there just doing his thing,
sure.
Very prophetic,
it was very prophetic of Mambo number 5. It was a prophecy.
They have like, they zoom out, and that was so gorgeous, like the entire like Copa, but. So they see like Carmen Miranda, and like to me, it's like this person that changed my life. And then there's all these women dancing, and they're all like white, and it's like, come on, just like hire 10 Latina dancers to do the thing,
right?
Like you're at the Copa. Come on, who cares if it's not accurate historically or whatever?
Yeah, I think that's the thing with Amy Sherman-Palladino. You're not going to get that kind of. You're not going to get that kind of racial gender parity satisfaction that you might want, you know, that
parity satisfaction in the sense of
you're just not going to get the justice views that you would, you know what I mean?
Sure.
She's always had a problem.
They could have given that sweet SAG money to 10 dancers.
That's true.
I mean, there was, you know,
the appropriate race.
Speaking of, can we do a little correction section?
And because the thing is, like, she didn't do it in a pointed way where, like, look at how these are all white dance, you know what I mean?
No, but
it wasn't to make a point. Yeah. Well, I'm saying,
the second they are about to enter screen, I'm like,
yeah, and that's
whiteies.
Why
whiteies.
That's why people should think about these things. And I'm saying, like, she didn't do it as if to say, see how crazy that was that they didn't cast Latina women. Like, it wasn't pointed out. You
like
know
that,
what I mean?
Yeah.
It wasn't like just a display of
right. It was just who cares.
Yeah, it was just who cares. Yeah. And that to me,
which
is why
what the majority of things have been. It's not like people are like, let's purposely not do it. It's more like. Oh, yeah, who cares? Whatever. Yeah, that looks better.
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh, you're affecting lives.
Totally.
You're affecting lives.
You're affecting lives, my life.
And young lives.
But I really love how everything was, this episode was particularly beautiful.
Quick preemptive correction section, folks. I'm about to say the name Norman Lear, but I definitely meant Norman Rockwell, the painter, not Norman Lear, the sitcom extraordinaire. So just a preemptive correction. I know. Sorry about that. On with the show. There's a few shots that felt like Norman Lear, but feminist-inflected Norman Lear paintings, like Midge on the ground in her bedroom listening to the Red Fox
record. It was a lot, yeah, but it was beautiful.
Or Susie and Midge at the Frankfurter place near the end.
Yeah.
Where it's like, this frame is just like, just put it on a wall. It's beautiful.
But then funnily, like the kiosk with a typewriter and like the march, the protest.
The women's march.
The women's march of LA.
With Jane Jacobs.
It was very like those two specifically jumped out at me as like studio setty, like shittier. I don't know.
I think the women's march was outside. I think it was the location, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was like in the actual park.
Yeah.
It just looked different than the rest. I don't know.
Gotcha.
That part in the kiosk. They both
did.
It didn't feel as painterly as it usually does.
They didn't. They stood out for me.
It felt a little contemporary, maybe.
Yeah. I read on IMDb that she's like a bunch of women gathering, like what are 2x1 pantyhose?
So many women in one place. 2-for-1 pantyhose?
Pantyhose started when the miniskirt started, which is like late 60s.
Mm-hmm.
So at that time, it should have been stocking. Something like stupid, like...
Oh, so that was an anachronism.
Yeah, there are a couple.
Okay, gotcha.
Well, there's other... like, actually, during that scene, I started to get rub a little bit with the phrasing. Like, Midge is delivering her... you know, speech to the quote-unquote audience at the march, and she goes,
so I don't live anywhere near here, and I have absolutely no idea what's going on at all. I mean, 5 minutes ago I was buying records for my son, and he wanted to walk through the park, and then I stumbled upon this rally, and I was like, so many women,
and I was like, we didn't say that back then. No one said, I was like.
Nobody
said that in the 50s.
When do you think that started? 80s?
Maybe, but I remember in my childhood that not really being a turn of phrase as much.
Yeah.
And the word nerd.
In the early 80s.
Also.
Oh, yeah. Nerd alert.
Well, I don't know if you know David, but Dave Levin.
You're correct. Yeah. Dave Levin. I know. Yeah, I saw Dave Levin.
It was so cool.
That was amazing. I was like, oh, perfect casting.
Of course, perfect.
So Dave Levin is a...
is the nerd in the basement.
At the music store that Midge and Susie go to.
And actually, no one looks or acts like Dave
Levin. And Susie calls him nerd,
and
that's not an accurate word for the time.
It's true.
Virgil, Oz, meet Midge.
Nice to meet you, fellas.
I'm pretty sure that's the sound of two guys spontaneously ejaculating.
Okay.
They were just going in so hard on those guys.
I know.
They're virgins. They're nerds. They just
I loved the scene. I thought they were a really good little, what do you call it?
Lucy
Sauer and Waldorf.
Yeah.
Virgil is Dave Broadband, like, who's a UCB New York alum that... was a fucking fixture theater in UCB.
He just started really young and kind of was like his
He had
life.
His corner. And it was like, it was cool to see him because it was like, that literally could not be a better casting.
Yeah, it was great. I really enjoyed this episode. Her like, yeah, from that scene. I don't know if you have more segments. You have everything queued in. I'm very impressed by you.
Some would say overly programmed.
Oh, that's happening.
Funny that happened right there when you were saying
overly programmed.
Overly 011.
So do you guys agree? Wow. Did they say was like? That? I don't know why that bothered
me
so much.
No, I'm with you on that word. It feels strange.
It didn't feel...
Mm-hmm.
It felt unnecessary.
It's like she would be saying, it's on fleek.
A little bit. It's like...
Oh, yeah, Jane Jacobs is bae.
You don't need to talk like that.
No one says that.
That's so stupid. I love it.
So that whole thing, Midge goes to the park with Ethan, drops him off with a stranger.
Where is Ethan the rest of the time?
Just so she can not have to deal with it for the rest of the scene, Amy has Midge drop her off with some lady. And then
she will not deal with this kid at all.
And then stumbles onto a microphone, crushes it. Everyone loves her. Woo!
That drove me fucking crazy.
I wasn't sure what to take away from that scene. This is like, see, Midge is going to get into like political spaces and be socially conscious.
It as like she's becoming more awakened to the circumstances of others.
Okay.
So took it as that. But then it's like, is there no arena in which she can't spend 10 minutes doing research and then become the beloved, you know, like new face of this, you know what I mean? Like
that was the first one that felt too pat. Yeah,
too pat.
Well, especially because it was very few jokes, so I don't understand why they prompted her to speak versus maybe
you look like you got a lot to say.
Yeah, yeah. You're
insane.
There really speaking a
lot. Is this the Truman Show?
I know, because all the other occasions she's just by a stage, so she can't end up performing.
Sure.
But this is like she's interrupting.
Yeah,
and also.
The end is near.
Hey,
you look like you know when the end is. It's like, okay.
Here's a microphone ready
Black Lives Matter. Hey, Midge, you look like you care about Black lives.
You look like you know where there's a sale.
The subway will be delayed 5 minutes. You look like you know subway schedules. Yeah.
It also feels like a missed opportunity to just see a character realize that how unaware politically she is and just like be with her kid or, you know, like they could have.
I really didn't get what that was supposed to communicate about Midge. But
I think at the beginning, like Susie's like, what's your stand-up type? And she's like a little bit political, personal or political?
Personal tinged political. With political.
Yeah, and then like that happened. So
are you a stalker or are you a planter?
Yeah, so that was in when
she goes to this other store that she's like, yes, I'm a stalker.
Midge meets Susie at the Gaslight and they go through, and this is when we get into process. So much of this episode and all this stand-up and comedy stuff is about process. Research these guys. Look at these guys. Here's your homework. Here's like, study
exploring.
This physical stuff.
Yeah.
And you get to, I think, what becomes like a crucial question of the series, which is the name. What's Midge's name going to be?
Hey, what do you think about my name?
Well, I would send my parents a thank you card, but I've heard worse.
I think I need a new one.
Why?
I don't want to use my real name.
Why not?
Because I don't want people to know I'm talking about me. I want them to think I'm talking about Tula Rain.
Huh? That's a stripper name.
What about Lottie McAllister?
That's an Irish stripper name. Use your real one.
No. Miriam Maisel's a person. Anya Morgenstern is
my cleaning lady. No.
It's weird that she said cleaning lady when she's very poor and Anya has Morgan never said. Had a cleaning lady.
Yeah, I think it's an expression, I guess, in that sense.
I think she's making a joke.
I know.
Susie's funny.
It's true.
That's the thing is Susie, like, Susie, you go on all stage. Right. You're funny.
Maybe too nitpicky, but so you that, think this is a central question. Obviously, it is to the plot.
I think it is because it's the arc of, like, are you going to be truthful about your identity, who you are on stage? And you will see how that plays out.
And
in
the real
future
fear
episodes.
Of like her social life kind of crumbling.
Yeah, vulnerability.
There's consequences for Midge outside of just being embarrassed.
Mm-hmm. To become, you know? Especially in a community like Upper West Side. Jewish, like, very specific.
Yeah, sure. There's a plan for your life.
Yeah. So
and we can see that when she's in the elevator with her mother, and her mother's got this whole story, right, about how what's really
that
going
was
on.
Painful.
Heartbreaking, yeah. So to me, Rose Weissman, I think, is the least, even as much as I don't love Joel, she's the least interesting one in the family for me to watch because I don't,
really?
I don't
kind
know
of
what
not.
I don't know what her thing that. Is. I don't know like what her other than we have to keep up appearances and I'm trying to please everybody. But I don't get more dimension. I don't know if they're exploring her femininity in a way that I find interesting or enjoyable. It's just the mom that's trying to keep it together at Thanksgiving dinner Yom Kippur.
We've
in this
seen
case.
This.
To me,
it's like what you're saying. Like, we've seen this kind of like.
I feel like. So,
the broad strokes of it is are like seen before.
Yeah, where Abe is very interesting to me, and even Joel and all his wimpiness is compelling on some level. Rose is like. Oh, she just wants to make everyone happy. Okay.
Yeah.
Like
I don't
it just kind of.
That's not how I feel at all.
How do you feel about it?
I feel differently. I changed my mind about it when in this episode, as soon as Abe falls asleep, she like wakes up like a little eagle to see if he's awake and then goes and does her like
And
routine
she does the exact same routine
that
as
her
Midge
daughter.
Does
yes.
in the pilot of the show.
So it's kind of funny like the mother-daughter relationship is so strong, like it's such mm-hmm. a big thing for I think in the Jewish like humor historically, but also as a woman it is such a thing. And especially in the 50s.
Yeah.
So it's kind of funny to see her, Rose, like, parallel each other and kind of, like, I don't know. I'm curious to decipher that relationship.
Mm-hmm. You remember when Abe talks about her being, like, this really interesting woman when he mm-hmm. first met her?
That's a spoiler.
It's a spoiler, but I also see that. I see that without needing that portion of it from him because mm-hmm. She is a bit of a force of nature. Her conversation on the phone in the last episode with Susie shows that she has some sort of like sway over people and she's very strong-willed in her own way. I appreciate
and she's like,
her.
I get you things. That's what I do. And I was like, oh, that's
And
what
that's the way
does.
My mom talks to me. I was listening to this thing on NPR today about like women in Pakistan who make a choice in their lives about whether or not they're going to step outside of the system, which is a lot of a rougher way to go, mm-hmm. or they're going to work the system, which is to marry well and, you know, not for love, make sure that your life is about a certain amount of, like, rule following. And I feel that for Rose. Like, I feel like Rose's whole life is about, no, you're not doing this right. You got to work the system. You know, your life is going all astray because you think you can be this big thing that you're, you know, you think you can soar like an eagle, but you can't soar like an eagle until you get this shit in order. And it's kind of...
She knows what it's like to be a woman, too, I guess. I mean, she is doing it. I feel like part of that craziness that happens with women is if you have a daughter and you know kind of like how the system is and you fallen.
Yeah.
You've like managed to work within the system. You're like, no, just do it like this. It's just easier for you. It's going to be better, easier, faster. Like,
Yeah. And her heartbreak at when Midge is like free, not doing what she doesn't know what Midge is up to. Mm-hmm. She's like really heartbroken about that because she's like kind of lost a sense of control over the situation. And so it's like that sort of like you're really saying goodbye to your kids. And so when she gets Midge back in the house, she's like, yay, everything's great.
Here's your...
Yeah.
And that's my mom kind of like when I go visit her, she's like... Can I make you, like, she'll be like, I got you your cheese. And then, like, she's like, I put this in your bedroom to say, well, and, like, she just knows how to get me to be, like, a little girl. It's weird.
Yeah.
But it's, like, that little girl thing.
Yeah.
It's, like, it's a mother-daughter connection. It's very, seeing those things, how she prepared her room for, like, her to come back and stuff, being so happy. I get you things. It's, like, taking her to being 15. Or at least to my relationship with my mother when I was 15.
Yeah.
I like it because you kind of see Rose's personality through Midge's. But it's hard. I feel like she's going to have more, maybe a bigger, I don't know, evolution in the next season.
Mm. Yeah.
Rose. At least she's going to have a heart attack at some point. She finds out.
Am I right?
Whoa. This is a prophecy.
Oh, wow. I'm sorry. I get possessed, really, and I do medical predictions.
Oh, no. Okay.
Oh, yeah. That is the segment we have is medical predictions.
Medical. Beep, 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 beep. Medical predictions.
She's going to have a heart
Gout.
Attack.
Gout. All right.
You know,
that was medical predictions.
You make me want to.
You know, you make me want to.
Gout. I think all that stuff reminds me of Emily taking in Rory in season 6 as well. And that kind of flavor of control.
Yes.
Yeah. And for this week's correction section.
I need a beat.
Correction section. Oh, what's your connection to your culture?
It's disgusting what I do. I don't know. I kind of want to do like a jazzy jazz flute
I like
type
that.
Of thing.
No, I was on board with that.
Veronica's losing it. All right. We
I
did
don't
get,
understand what your like your body position was.
I'm an embarrassing human being to be around. I know this because I am me.
But I admire that quality of just getting into a song like that.
I think you admire it because it's over here. Oh, my God. Not near you. Okay. So go. You have so many compiled.
We have one from Chloe. She says, listening to Maisel Goyes and would super love a woman of color for later episodes to talk about other people of color speaking roles on Maisel. Might make the conversation about race relations feel a bit more grounded.
Mm.
So that was an interesting...
All right, I'll take over.
Yeah. You want to just speak on that for 20 minutes?
Yeah, for like each episode. Well, mostly it is weird. I mean, the entire show, there's nothing to talk about because there's like so little. I mean, she has that like, I don't know, pandering to... I don't know. She talks to the jazz musicians at some point. There's like a black model that everyone keeps... That's like such a... It's funny. Cause,
oh, yeah. In a future episode, there's a black model.
Yeah.
Yeah. And all the girls are like, she's so pretty. And they all talk about her all the time and how pretty she is. And that is one of the most annoying things that could happen if you're the only one that's like of color. And
right.
If all the other girls are white and they're like, you're so pretty. It's like
fetishizing your...
Like it's a weird thing where you feel actually threatened and horribly like looked at,
under scrutiny.
Why she's this exotic person? Like if there's sometimes that feel when someone says you're so pretty.
Yeah,
yeah.
Or like they're about to touch you.
Like they're about to like maybe kill you because taxidermy, you're there and you're different, and that is very real.
Yeah,
and a weird threat. It's a weird passive aggressive threat.
Right.
So I actually got triggered when I saw when everyone kept being like, she's so pretty, she's so pretty. And it's the only woman of color that has spoken or smiled and then said like a word.
It's an interesting intersection on this show because I feel like there's weirdly, because it's 2017, there's more bit players who have like three lines that are people of color than there ever was on Gilmore.
Right.
But then it's like, it's the late 50s and you're not doing other stuff with it.
Yeah.
So it's this weird thing where it's like more than ever for an Amy thing.
Right.
But then not playing with it and playing like that actual given circumstance.
Yeah. Especially in a city like New York.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when they keep talking about downtown being such a thing. Like, where are the black people or where are the Latinos or, you know, any of the other like ethnicities? Like, even in the 50s, I feel like specifically European groups were still like...
Yeah.
The other. So that could
be. Yeah, I don't feel there. So bad about gentrifying the East Village since apparently it was always white. It's been, yeah. Apparently it was always a white general coffee shop.
Yeah, nothing was really yeah. lost there.
Yeah.
Always.
And speaking of, this is something you put out to the universe, Alice, talking about the sort of affectations of Midge's parents. Oh, yeah. This comes from Joelle. Ooh. And she says, I was fascinated to hear your concerns that perhaps Shalhoub's performance is so big, it's approaching offensive. And we compared it to Judith Light's performance in Transparent. Mm. That's what I did. I was floored. As a 30-something Jew girl from Connecticut, born to Jewish New Yorkers, I was exposed to the full spectrum of Jewish voices my whole life. Relatives who use Yiddish to insult and exclaim, teachers, rabbis who affected a Yiddish-influenced accent when they were lecturing.
I wish I had that.
And friends' parents who treated Friday night dinner as a chance to work on their amateur comedy routines. It wasn't until I had dinner with my non-Jewish friends, families in high school that I realized not everyone is so dramatic, and it must be some byproduct of the Jewish cultures. I say culture because many, many Jews I know think of Judaism as a cultural experience over religious. The religious aspect is there, but can frequently take a back seat to the traditions and customs, the repetition, the familiarity, and learned steps and motions are shared experience within families and communities. So when Shalhoub gives his performance to a rhythm, when he repeats certain beats and phrases, when Yiddish seeps out of his pores and into his mannerisms, he turns into a member of my family.
Aww.
Miss Pacha. Clear your throat on the cha. Miss Pacha.
Pacha.
Okay.
Nice, Vera.
He reminds me of my best friend's dad, who would interview Friday night dinner guests testing for quick wit and our worthiness to set the table. Modern Jewish culture is performative at its roots, and I could never be insulted by such a charming portrayal.
Oh,
that was very sweet. Thank you, Joelle.
I really love that. Thank you so much,
That's
Joelle.
What I felt like. I was like, that he is this Jewish father that I've definitely seen someone like him.
It is. You want to cry.
It's very Hispanic, too. There's this, like, rhythm. And performance and drama. Mm. And there's just like a little bit of overdoing it all. And a little bit of, you're killing me. And you're like, oh, sorry.
And I'm a Midwestern person. And I'm from the mid of the mid of the mid of the West. So we don't do that. Like, it's not, yeah, it's just very like.
It's not performance.
How is it fatherly? The most fatherly you can be in the Midwest is like, well, all right. You have a good time. Talk to your mom. Like, it's, like, very
right.
barely there is the best version of it. So that's an amazing – I love
that.
Fans
I want to
of
talk
this show.
To her more.
I know. Like, the most thoughtful – I was thinking about the fans in the drive down.
The fans.
Cue the music.
I usually try to call them listeners.
And, you know, the fans are just – I just feel like, you know, of all the types of fandoms, of all the different shows, the Gilmore – the Gillies, as I'll call them.
I don't know if they're still
such
Gillies.
An optimist. So let me finish. Such an optimistic group of people that are curious, as well as, you know, intellectually stimulated by things that are. I have nowhere to go with this. You know, they're not. They're not young. They're not old. They're not one. I can't do this anymore.
Okay.
I don't have anything. You're looking at me in a way where I know that I'm in trouble.
What? No, you're not in trouble.
I know I
listening.
Fucked up.
No.
I know I'm getting tossed.
What? Never.
I can see it right now.
Alice, you can leave.
Getting a stern
him.
Email.
Alice, you can leave him.
This is why I stay.
Come back
this
to our Jewish home, Alice.
I've never
come
sent
back.
A stern email in my life. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Squarespace. Now, unlike anything I've ever talked about on the air, I actually stand by Squarespace. I actually do because I've used it for everything I've made. Literally, GilmoreGuysShow.com, the very website for this very podcast, was made using Squarespace. How beautiful is that? KevinTPorter.com, I made that using Squarespace. My old bake shop website, that was made using Squarespace. Because you can do it all with Squarespace. You can sell content on your website. So exclusive stuff behind a paywall. You can sell memberships, courses, or sell files your customers can download, like PDFs, music, or eBooks. You can do that with Squarespace. You can do analytics with Squarespace. So you can figure out who's visiting your website and why. And figure out how to get traffic and where's it coming from. You can also have people do flexible payments on Squarespace. Make checkout seamless for your customers with simple but powerful payment tools. Accept credit cards, PayPal, Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer customers the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and ClearPay. How nice is that? You can also do email campaigns, so there's constant outreach for your stuff and people know where to find you. So I'm going to let you know where to find Squarespace. Head to squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/GilmoreGuys to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or a domain. That's squarespace.com/GilmoreGuys.
I really love that she goes to his apartment and takes her coat off, and she's just like, this is a Methodist version of us. And I was like so offended because I felt like that happened to me.
Okay, so this is when Midge drops Ethan off at Joel's place, which she finds out is actually Penny Pan and Joel's place.
Penny Pan.
I thought I'd find you squatting in some downtown smoke-filled atelier, not two blocks away, living the Methodist version of our life with the Methodist version of me. Does she have an on switch?
Ethan's good now. You can go if you want.
No, he was throwing up earlier. I figure I should stay around a minute and make sure he's not going to blow again.
What?
You know what's funny? I don't have my apartment anymore. You have my apartment. You have a lot of my things, actually. You're welcome. Dinner?
Yes.
What?
Pot roast.
The Methodist version of brisket.
Well, this is my favorite scene of the episode and one of my favorites in the series, just because it had such a clear game. Methodist version of this. The Methodist version of that.
I love that.
And how like deeply cultural it is, and how Joel is denying what is actually right in his life.
Yeah.
And that, like, the way it all tied together, it reminded me of some of my favorite dialogue scenes ever. Again, just two people in conflict with each other.
I know. You like that conflict. Yeah. Yeah.
And I love the way that she stepped to Penny in this, like, you're a statue. Like, you're an object to me. Like, she just walked up to her and just looked her up and down like she wasn't even in the, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it was a photograph of her.
Yeah.
And then is like, is she going to defend herself?
Does
she have an on switch? Like, why aren't you talking back to me? Oh, because you're a fucking, you know, the Methodist version of me. You don't have any gumption whatsoever. I loved that. That was incredible.
Yeah. It personally hits home.
I understand.
All the Jewish boys
cryptic.
Lost to the Methodist version. The versions. All them Jewish boys. No, actually, I haven't made it that many.
Ooh, it sounds like a really good song.
Jewish. Are you calling like all of our Jewish boy listeners? That sounds like a good Carly Rae.
Calling all
your Jewish boys.
I like that hook.
Like a
calling all Jewish boys. Why?
Why are you doing this?
Calling all your Jewish boys. Why? Why?
I don't know. It's like, could be Carly Rae, you know.
Oh, I love.
I really like that.
See, that was my Carly Rae.
Some violins, like some like.
Carly Slay.
Yeah. We'll
it's
do
good.
It. We're
going to
do it.
No, it's good.
Yeah, we're going to do it.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, we do it.
I really liked it. I like that song.
And I like that in
noted
in this scene and in this fight, you actually get
Joel.
The reason and rationale why Joel left or what he feels now.
So
and then
intense.
He says, "You are a prince, a real prince. I hope Penny knows what a prince you are."
I don't understand you, Midge.
You don't understand me. Me.
I said I'd come back. Remember?
The duck.
I came to you and I said, let's try again. You said no.
Oh, no. Uh-uh. You don't get to rewrite this. You're the one who left, not me. I'm the good guy. You're the bad guy. Stamp it, ship it. That's all she wrote, folks.
Fine.
When are you coming to get your things?
I love her righteous anger.
In my house and I want them gone.
You said you packed them up.
I'm not packing up your things. Penny can pack up your things so you can buy new things for your new life.
I'll come get them.
Not when I'm home.
Fine. I'll come get my things when you're not home because we're four.
You're four.
And I want my notebook.
What notebook?
My comedy notebook.
This is
you mean
the
my
balls.
Comedy notebook.
It was about me.
Yeah.
Everything's about you.
I want it.
Why? You quit, remember?
I might try again. You don't know. It's mine. I want it.
Well, I don't know where it is, but even if I did, as long as you have Bob Newhart's album, you'll be fine.
Take it.
Damn.
Low blow, Mitch.
You said you didn't want our life. But this is our life. You didn't go somewhere exotic or different. You went across the fucking street.
I had to.
You had to? Why? Tell me why.
It doesn't even...
God damn it, Joel. I'll do it.
Because. After that night at the club, after I failed like that, I just knew you'd never look at me the same again. You tell me I'm not right.
He was sleeping with her before.
True that.
Just not about the club part.
Just not about the club part.
You got him.
Sorry I got you mixed up in this. Tell Ethan I'll pick him up tomorrow. Don't baptize him while I'm gone.
I love that.
Because it's the biggest fear with the men who just start dating those Methodists.
That is the number one fear.
Number one fear.
Yeah.
And the
Do you think Joel's telling the truth here? That it was just like, I feel inferior next to you?
And it was like, I had to, you'd never look at me the same way again. But Veronica's point here rings true that, yeah, but you were already fucking your secretary before that night happened. So that's what I've been trying to say, is that Joel felt inferior for many months. And the reason he went out is because Midge is too big of a person and too awesome and made him feel like in his feelings about, like, you know, his weak ego
that
for too long. And
Penny's
a weak, you know, willed person. So he just went to her. And that was the straw that broke the camel's back. But he was already – it's like I feel like he
you
was
don't
sleeping
leave
with Penny.
After one night.
He was sleeping with Penny. He was feeling guilty about it, hating himself about it. But he was doing it anyway, and then he figured, why the fuck not? I'm going to just continue to hate myself.
Yeah, even guys take a second to do things like that, you know? I don't know. It wasn't even a question that she was just going to go ahead and storm in and do all that. And it never felt, like, inappropriate or, like, she didn't have the right to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I was never, like, cringing, like, oh, no, get out. I was like, oh, yeah, yeah. Like, I don't know.
It was so satisfying to watch.
Yeah. Me too. I didn't feel at all that way.
It was a smackdown.
Like, yeah.
Usually I would.
Deserved, yeah.
I feel like it's a big decision that the character decides to suddenly break down and do that thing.
Yeah.
This is like
completely
she
earned.
Expects to call him the next day and be like, I'm picking him up.
Right.
Like it's nothing.
Yeah.
I really like that.
That domestic fight.
Mm-hmm. I also think, yeah, and it was earned. And we do see it from her perspective at this point. So even if she is, like, not seeing Joel's perspective and you might have some – like, I kind of feel like I feel for Joel. I feel like he has a point – like, he has a reason to feel insignificant next to her because he's just not strong enough of a person to
and
deal
with
her.
And you see also, like, the toxic message – that he actually has gotten as a boy, as a man,
right?
From you can see his like family, toxic masculinity seeping out.
Yeah, and
like mine has throughout this podcast.
You know,
unfortunately, I think so.
No, that's not true. No, it hasn't.
I don't think so.
Zero amount is how much.
That's what I would say.
I would say negative amounts.
Yeah,
so
I feel
I've
like
absorbed it.
You've absorbed toxic masculinity. Maybe it's in the. That's
it's
why
in
you
the couch.
Feel it. It's in
right.
the yeah.
Oh no!
It's gone in through the pores.
Yeah.
So Midge and Susie end up doing a little tour of all the underground comedy
editing
stuff.
All of that out.
I love
it's like the whole thing is gone. And I'll be happy if it is. I'll say that.
I love that. I love that they go to this weirdo guy with his weirdo bit. I was laughing.
Oh, the ventriloquist dummy who killed himself.
I love that. And I was laughing. And then I was like, are they going to make him seem like he failed? And then they started laughing.
I love that.
Because I was like, oh, yeah, sometimes I am that. Weird person who just likes that weird bit.
Vero, did you think that like this show in general and this episode in particular was a more accurate representation of like what it feels like and is like to learn about comedy for the first time than anything else you've seen?
Yeah, for sure.
Kind of leading the witness, but
yes or no.
Yes or no. And if it's no,
I feel
that's
like
wrong.
I feel like I've been led to a yes.
Yes. But that's how I felt. So I wanted to know if you
Well, they really study the nuances, right?
Yeah.
They study the types of places and what you go do at those places, which takes a while to learn.
Yeah.
UCB versus the comedies.
Totally.
Like you try out new material at certain places, and there's certain places where you go and do a full like what you already know how to do.
Yeah.
And like body language, pause for applause. Like, so there's so many things that, but no one's in at UCB like, okay, observe the comic. Okay. And you know, you're just like watching hours of comedy, and somehow it gets,
it
doesn't matter because as many hours as you watch, you still have to do it to get it in your body. And that was the final message of this, which is like,
true.
You just have to do it.
That's my question
there's
for both of you is
so
do you think it got too like, look how he pauses and almost too like, technical rather than like the spirit of this is an authentic comic and this is blah blah blah. I don't know because I wanted to put that.
But
to
it's
both
kind
of you.
Like the eye which in which with which you go to a show. I'm never like the magic. I'm like, whoa, perfect timing.
Yes.
How well that was a good reversal. Like that's how your brain will forever.
Okay.
Ever be.
Nice.
That's what I was gonna say.
Like yeah, that's it's it will never not be technical.
It's
for me.
It's fine to me because in a lot of shows they do exposition really clunkily, and this is like an a dialogue expository version of what is literally going on in my brain when
all
I'm
of the
watching
time
stand-up.
That you're watching. Yeah.
Is going. I like. She says. I like that lean. That's ridiculous. Like nobody would ever. Like, comment. I mean, actually, I actually have. I have. But, like, in my brain, I think those things.
I've seen, like, people take the mic in a certain way or, like, walk in a certain way. And I'm like, ah.
Yeah.
Right.
And Sean Perlman, actually, we should probably have him on the show at some point. But, like, he's the one who taught me basically everything I first knew. Like, I went through what Midge is going through with Susie with Sean Perlman. And he was my co-conspirator. Like, he and I.
Your partner in crime.
He was so excited to teach somebody about what he knew about stand-up. He loved stand-up the same amount as I do, and not just doing it, but watching it. And we would go to all these shows and watch people and marvel at, like, the different styles of the way people walk onto stage and all those things. So we really did do this. And now I continue in my head to do this. I would say, like, it is a little bit, like, extra, because it's for the show, though. I don't think it's... Because
you have to see it in a filmed medium. And so it's they have to break it down in a physical
way. Exactly.
Yeah.
And I never had, like, a fairy godmother to do that with me.
Yeah.
That's just, like, how it started happening. Especially after you start performing and you're like, oh, what do they do? Like, how do they do that?
Yeah. Same with improv.
And even, like, tacky or bad shows, I'm like, why is this bad?
Me
like,
too.
Like, what is this happen? Why why is this person unlikable or whatever?
It's impossible not to puzzle over.
Yeah. This episode was extremely satisfactory to it. Like, I was
it
like,
did. It
it's
scratched that
very
itch.
Juicy.
I love this show because I've never seen it talked about on screen that way, ever.
And that dorkiness that she has is kind of like my style of dork.
Totally.
It's just a nightmare.
I see that.
Yeah.
It is, yeah.
it's a nightmare.
And I like that it's Susie as a... What's that?
It's a nightmare.
Yeah.
Oh, I like that Susie as a non-comic can also share in that, like... Mm-hmm. She can still see the ones and zeros in the matrix of that stuff.
Ooh,
just after owning the Gaslight and seeing so many hours and hundreds of hours of stuff that she herself, even though that is not her craft and her trade, that she can identify those things and be able to take someone's hand and teach them why.
Mm-hmm. And those people are very necessary for comics to succeed. There's always people like that, like the bookers and people who are good techs or... Just like people around the comedy scene that are not necessarily like, they don't have a need to go on stage.
And I feel like this is what I talked about last week too, not to repeat, but it is especially prescient in the sense that Veronica and I share the same manager. And
Olivia.
So doesn't Susie and Olivia have a little bit of a simpatico thing going on?
Yeah, she's great. But she's definitely like one of those people who... Everyone she likes, I really super like.
Yeah.
Which is like, there's definitely, somehow she figured out how to curate just people. Like everyone's very different in sense of humor or like what they do, but I don't know how, but it just works out.
She has taste.
Yeah.
All it is she has a sense of taste that is specific.
Very specific.
It doesn't take much, but.
And it's good.
Apparently it's impossible for a lot of people in the industry.
But there are people who have no eye. They're just like, I think this person will succeed.
They're like, ooh, they've got a lot of buzz.
Yeah.
And there's like,
buzz.
Oh, I like them. And then you're like, oh, they murdered someone. They're like, don't like them anymore. I like the new guy. He also murdered someone. Don't like him anymore. Who's the next guy? It's just like the same
shit always
over
guys.
And over again. Yeah.
What did you guys think of that scene of Susie and Midge sharing some French fries and a burger? And
I love
Midge
that.
Trying to connect.
You know what I was interested in?
Yeah.
That to her, like to Susie, Midge's life is insane. And it is. And I can see why. Because she's like this unusual person in the stand-up world.
Well, I thought she really did a good job of recognizing Midge's privilege. She's like, no, we can't do this every night.
I can't do this again tomorrow night. I have a job. Your mom and dad don't pay my bills.
Right. You're right. I'm sorry.
I love
which you don't
that.
Usually get on ASP shows where it's like, yeah. Well, of course, you're privileged. You have money. You right. can afford to do it. I have a job, idiot.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
I loved
yeah.
all that calling out of it.
Yeah.
I also really connected yeah. with the idea of trying to connect with someone you work with. And
yeah, that's funny. Yeah.
And
you're like,
giving them the fries and it's a mixed result.
Totally. She's also like, here's my family. And Mitch is like, oh, wow. Cool. Mm-hmm. Like, her family is. So, like, Midge's family is kooky. Like, she... Kooky. Am I saying it right?
Kooky?
They're a couple of snickerdoodles, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah. So you can talk about it and be like, can you believe this?
Yeah.
But Susie's family is, like...
dysfunctional.
Messed
it's
up.
A different thing. Yeah. Like, yeah. it's a different stand-up set. Yeah. Like, yeah. it wouldn't yeah. be a yeah. quirky, yeah. fun stand-up set. It yeah. would be, like, dark.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
It's dark ass.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I love that. Yeah, she's not the person who's going to... stand on stage and kind of like do the jokes. Mm-hmm. She's just like, I don't know. It was interesting. And her resistance to be friends is like, I understand it.
I was so touched by all the little object work with like the fries and then holding the fries and like, no,
and
you can't have any fries.
She rips the bread to eat like the hot dog. I love that.
But the sweetest part is when she gave her the rest of the hot dog at the end of the scene because she's like, I'm sorry that your life sucks and I love you. It's just like a small little mm-hmm. gesture of kindness.
Love it.
It seemed to me pretty clear that Susie had this, you know, rough existence that wasn't, you know, sunshine and rainbows, and her resistance to being friends with people was about that.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, I'm not here to open up to people, and like, I know what my life looks like to the outside, and like, I'm not here to be, you know, I can't soften up and be vulnerable with a bunch of people all the time. I'm not, otherwise I'd be the victim, so I'm not being that.
Yeah.
Like, I'm here to make money off of, and I love the way she talked about her life. Like, no, I ask you about your life because I'm here to exploit it and make money off of it.
I thought maybe you were trying to be friends.
No, I'm just trying to inspire some thoughts for that notebook.
Hmm. Okay. Seems like you want to be friends.
I do not want to be friends.
Yeah. Like, that is exactly what you do
yeah,
with
she wasn't
stand-up.
Fun. Yeah.
If you're a writer, if you're a stand-up, that's what happens. And so it's stupid to sugarcoat the process. And I appreciated that take on it, you know, whether it's right or wrong.
Yeah, both of them have a... If they don't want to call it friendship, they do have a relationship that's very, like, sincere.
Mm-hmm.
Like, very completely. There's no mystery here. She yeah. tells him, she's, like, exactly who she is.
Yeah.
I think it's a friendship really whether friendship. Susie wants it to be or not.
Yeah, exactly.
It's already a
it's
friendship.
It's going to be. It is. I'm curious to know what the Palladinoisms were going to be because I had a guess. Of one of them. But I forgot what it was.
We can talk about it.
Can
if you
we
want
do
to.
A Palladinoism?
We can
please do them because I do have and I forgot what it was and it's tickling my brain right now.
Well, one was visual.
It's itching my brain.
In that one was completely visual.
Okay.
In that it was Midge and her mom doing the exact same beauty care routine.
Okay.
Which you see Lorelai yeah. and Emily do in the Bracebridge dinner in season
Shut
two of
up.
Gilmore Girls. Like to the point where it's like synchronized dancing. And Rory's like, whoa.
Oh my
and
god.
And then they freak
I forgot
out.
About that.
And then the rest one has to do with the box of an ex. One has to do with what children do. So let's take a listen.
What's that?
It's a box of Joel's things.
I'll take it.
Here. I don't want to look at that anymore. Okay.
Season one of Gilmore Girls, the breakup part
no,
two.
No, take it out of the house. Throw it in a dumpster. Burn it. I don't care. Just, I want it gone.
God, give me that.
Okay,
who's three?
When I was three, I could resell the shoe.
This girl could name the state capitals at three.
So the one in the middle was when they turn off Howdy Doody and Ethan yeah. just screams like a banshee. And then that
it's
second clip
scream.
Was from season six of Gilmore Girls when Lorelai's watching Gigi.
Shit, I think you missed one.
The Palladinos.
That wasn't one of the ones
well,
that I
what was
saw.
The one you
I know,
thought?
It's driving me crazy. I'm not going to remember it.
Oh, no.
It was something that I was like, I bet this is going to be a Palladinoism. Fuck. Maybe I'll think of it later.
Well, the
Let's
one
continue in talking about it.
I do so love the idea.
Palladinoism is when you
it's
see
something
from
they repeat
Gilmore.
From.
It's like
from
a device
series to series, or like an idea that's repeated.
She's done
again.
It. I see.
Yeah, mm-hmm. she uses
I
it.
See.
I like that their only concept of children is like, yeah, they just scream a lot, right?
Yes!
They just
and then you kind of like shove them away. From,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
From
put them in whatever. Make it stop.
And actually, someone who's been really good at cataloging these is Kendall Morton on Twitter at Ken Dull Dull Moron on Twitter. She has a great Twitter thread. Of all the Palladinoisms.
Interesting.
And then some.
I read a headline of an article that said that she's a terrible mother. And I'm like, is she a terrible mother?
Mitch?
Or is she Or are we just not focusing on her mother part of the story?
I think she's indifferent to her motherhood. I think she...
Well, like, she kind of says something about it.
But it's nice to have a woman who you can see in a TV show where she's ambivalent about her own motherhood, mm-hmm. but it's not framed as deep depression, mm-hmm. where it's like...
Right, because it, oh, it clearly can't just she's be like, wrong. Yeah. I just feel like this. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I'm happy. I just don't care.
Yeah. I mean, and also it is contextual in the time period.
Yeah.
In the 50s, as we've seen in Mad Men, I'll say this again.
Mad Men.
Like, we know that... Children were treated differently. There wasn't helicopter parenting, wasn't a thing. People were extremely detached from their kids. They would just let them go do whatever while they, at a certain age, you know?
It was less like serial killery in that yeah. time. It was less
like serial killery yeah. Clinton. Yeah.
yeah. Yeah. It was more, you know,
maybe it was the thing in the
wooden toys
basement at the record store.
Like Nerd Alert?
Not Nerd Alert, but like the way the
because Lorelai says on season 7, but sure. that wasn't
bad. Nerd Alert is such a modern phrase. That's but I like think too much.
I was thinking maybe it would be the thing with the like Statler and Waldorfness of like the two guys, but I don't know. Like I think it was something else.
I think
more,
there's an ejaculation
more
joke
germane
in Bunheads
to the characters.
Too. Yeah,
but
is this also shot in L.A. or New York?
It's New York, baby.
New York,
all of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I love the scene in the record store because. A little story from my life when I was watching this for the first time. In bed, I was watching this scene in bed when they go into the record store, and my cat was on the bed, and then he was not on the bed afterward, like a second, and I like was looking at the screen, and I saw the cat on the television, like the cat that's in the record store, and for a very split second, I thought, how did he get in? I'm not kidding. Like, my brain did this. Because it
brains
looks,
can do that.
It's
what?
It's identical. Like, it is an identical cat to Birdie. He looks so much like Birdie that it's crazy. And Birdie would be, if there was a cat, to jump into a TV and be like, just like, I'm here now. Like, a little bit I was like, because he'll go in my house sometimes and be like up on a ledge and I'll be like, how the fuck? So I was like, what? And then I was like, oh, it's the TV. I can't possibly.
That cat also stood out to me, but differently. Because I don't have that same.
No.
Cat
no
or brain mine was more like it's so interesting that they barely like have the kids on camera
love it
yeah
who cares
she dealt with a cat decided to like add a cat to a scene
it's but so
it's just like
it's such
the typical like New York store that there's a cat
maybe a Palladinoism would be treating protest as a campy little musical interlude
sure
because it seems like that would happen in Stars Hollow all the time people would be like hey we all want to say something and we'd all gather and like that's the vibe of the protest
and it's like precious
in St. Mark's or whatever the park is and like Washington Square Park and that like
Washington
Square. And it's so precious and it's like actually these people were trying to and it's like small town stuff going on it's like no this is not you know like and everybody's like we can't wait to see the person you know it's just like so goody-goody.
Makes me miss New York at that time.
You know, in the 50s?
Yeah.
Oh, me too.
I think you're okay.
I'm not a vampire.
So
wait a minute. I've never thought that till now.
So Midge gets home. She gets in trouble with the parents.
I know.
Abe expresses it in a fun way.
Your mother vomited.
I did not vomit.
Well, she did something in the bathroom that took a very long time, and she did not come out looking happy.
And there was this whole thing like, let's get a second TV for Ethan so he doesn't scream all the time, and then they're not. They're like trying to ground her. And at the end, she says, I need a job. Cut to the credits.
That's the end.
Yeah, which it's like, in this episode, I didn't care that much about any of the other than that scene with Joel. I like all the stuff at home and Ethan being a little dick and the parents. I was just like, I'd rather get more processed stuff with Susie and her doing the comedy stuff.
I like the processed stuff.
Breaking it down. But the family beats started to feel repetitious.
I felt it maybe, but I also felt like just to devil's advocate, I felt like the repetitious nature of it was like meant to contribute to the claustrophobia of what it feels like to move home as an adult.
Sure.
Because a lot of us have done that. I've done it. And it is like this, oh God, this routine. Oh God, oh God, oh God, oh God, oh God. Oh God, I'm in my room. Oh, even what she's wearing in her bedroom is like such a teen.
Yeah, her wardrobe changes pretty significantly in this episode.
And so she's like, oh, I got to get a job because I can't be this kid.
Mm-hmm.
So. Point made.
No.
Wetterland style.
It was a good point. I
come
agree.
Come on down
I
to did. The
I
point
like your
factory.
I want to work there.
I got to get a job. I did like that because she is right. I'm excited to see that.
Maybe she just heard that song too that was out at the time. get a job. Da-da-da-da-da. Maybe that was what she was listening.
Get a job.
And she's like, ooh, I got to get a job. Subliminal.
Yeah, it was just an earworm. She didn't really actually think she needed to get a job. Let's do some Twitter Q&A.
Let's.
Tweet, tweet.
Cool. Megan said, who on earth is paying for Joel's quote-unquote Methodist version of his and Mitch's apartment? Moisha? It's clear that Joel can't support that kind of lifestyle on his own, and I can't imagine that Penny Pan is secretly minted.
That's true.
Yeah, it's who's true. Paying for that shit?
Oh, no explanation. A question that's asked quite often in Paladino shows.
Who's, where's the money coming
from? Who's bankrolling this?
I want to follow the money, but I can't. Russia. Oh, no. And what would that sound like? We take you to Russia.
I got the apartment, Joel.
We leave Russia.
I saw a photo of Paladino. I never knew this person until, I mean, I heard her name and I knew she was here.
To be feared.
But I saw her photo on IMDb and she has a hat.
Oh, yeah.
And then I saw Zuzi in the awards show and she had that hat.
Oh, yeah.
And is Zuzi like her on camera? Her? Like, is she like writing for Zuzi because she feels like Johnny Depp and the other guy?
Maybe. I feel like Tim every...
Burton. Tim Burton, who thinks like Johnny Depp is his on camera.
Borstein is the Tim Burton to Paladino's.
That's where I was going. I think every brunette protagonist she has in this TV in her TV shows
but there's
is her.
A specific hat thing there.
Well, I think this represents kind of a duality where Midge and Zuzi are ASP.
Mm-hmm.
They're the light and dark sides of her, if you were going to quantify that. But both of those
are
like
that's very
Star
Trek.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, interesting distillations of her two different parts of her personality. Ashley says, do you think the show's doing a good enough job of developing Zuzi as a legit second lead? We know she hates her family. We know she knows pretty much everything there is to know about the comedy field, but that's really it. When do you think she gets more depth?
She has it, but part of what attracts me to her is that she is that figure. No?
I agree. I felt she got a lot of depth this episode.
I think it's enough. I don't need to know everything about her home life.
I think writing mistakes a lot of people make are that you have to like really give a character a ton of shit to do and see them in all these different arenas to get depth. Sometimes it's just a line or two.
Yeah.
And Catherine S., I know y'all talked about it before when Midge did it, but the idea that your husband has to only see you when you're made up / perfect is deeply sad to me. I like the relationship between Abe and Rose overall, but do you think that this is a flaw in it or just a sign of the times?
I'm sure that Abe would not mind. He would just be like, are you okay today?
Yeah, that seems more Rose-driven than Abe-driven.
Well, that's like sign of the time kind of deal.
That's a point also that Brosnahan made in an interview I heard. Sure, I think on Fresh Air she was talking about the character of Midge. She said that this routine
saddened her at first,
but like you get the sense that, and this is totally true for Rose too, this is not really for Abe or for Joel. It's a thing that they do that's their routine. That's a thing that's their time for them.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that they're fooling their husbands is because they're keeping that little, like your jazz cat, they're keeping a little piece of their little tiny spa day that they have every night. That's for them.
Yeah.
Right.
And if it's a secret, it's kind of delicious or something. Like, there's a part
that's
of it
I feel about
that's
secrets.
Sad,
that's,
for sure. I'm
but
not
then a part
denying
of it that's
that.
Power.
But then a part of it that's their own little, maybe not power, but it's their just, like, their own little agency.
Power
moment.
Of yeah. sleeping less amount of hours
yeah.
and overall
hey,
in your lifetime.
Roasted.
My aunt once told me, like, I never paint my nails in front of my husband. Like, that's her thing that she keeps to, like, a mystery thing. And, like, in a sense, there is some truth to that. There's some sort of materialistic mystery that you could possibly have where you're like the person doesn't physically see everything and that's like a way of maintaining, which is like very old fashioned, but it, you know, especially in the 50s.
Yeah, like there's a lot of ball shaving that I never want to see.
True.
You know, like there's some things that I just
I'm good without. Yeah. Yeah. A lot of the
Can farting. We talk about this some more? Like, what kind of bullshit? So anything else we want to talk about in the episode before we wrap it up and give our schlamazels and mazel toffs?
I just feel like a lot happens in this episode. Mm. It's weird because it's almost like a large montage, but at the same time, it's like a lot happens.
It's a lot of
it's
time.
Joel's like moves to a new apartment and she just like waltzes in there and just she becomes part of a protest. She goes to an indie record store. She learns so much about comedy. Her family get, like, she moves to a new apartment. She lets go of her old life. Like, it's so much. It's so much packed into so much for a one person to go through. In general, think of your life if all of that is what was happening. Totally. It's like a lot.
It was a dense episode.
It was dense.
Yeah.
It was dense.
So the way this part works, Veronica, is we give our Mazel Toves and our Schlemazels. Mazel Tove we give to the things we like in the episode. Mm-hmm. Schlemazels, that's a thumbs down. We don't like that part of the episode.
Okay.
Alice is doing a pre-rendition of what the attitude
is
like.
I see it, yeah.
So why don't you start us off, Alice?
Well,
your Mazel Toves and Schlemazels.
I should have been thinking about this when I was doing my ridiculous act out. Okay. I would give a resounding Mazel Tove to the scene, the montage in the beginning, expertly directed, as you said.
Mm-hmm.
That, and also the choice of Barbra Streisand, although I don't totally respect the choice of the weird racist one before, this song is amazing.
And it felt iconic.
I really love those songs that are the message, the lyrical message of the song is, yay, everything's great. And then the melodic message of the song is like refrain and melancholy. I love that kind of song. So this is just a perfect, perfect, perfect scene to me. Schlemazel to the protest scene. I thought that was gratuitous and stupid. I hated it.
Well, I give Mazel Toves to, honestly, all the productions designed start to finish in this episode, in the record store, at the Copa. I was just knocked out by all of it. It was beautiful. Every part of it was beautiful. Mazel Tov to Alex Borstein as Susie, who gives vulnerability and toughness at the same time.
Love her.
And Mazel Tov to all the musical choices, as usual. Schlemazel to Ethan and just screaming kids and the fact that they're all just at the mercy of,
yeah.
And such a narrow.
It's a pretty good scream. I don't know.
I mean, props to him. Mazel Tov to him.
No, I don't know, because you're watching it and you're like, yes, make it stop. Like, you're with them in that moment. Yeah. I don't know, it's kind of funny. Like, I laughed out loud the first time I heard it. I was like, oh, God.
I love, the Shaloobster.
But yes.
But so Schlemazel to that.
Well, my Mazel Tov, that's how you say
Tove,
it? Tov.
Right?
I think
it's Tove. Like, isn't it? You would know.
No, you would
more
know.
Than
this
us.
This is your, well, no, your you
you're
name.
A Jewish.
Yeah, but this almost. Is your weird segment.
But it's but supposed you're saying to be Mazel and then Tov. It's supposed to be Mazel Tov.
Yeah, yeah.
How do you say that?
Mazel Tov.
You say Tov? Yeah. I thought it was Tov.
Like an we heard it was
we're
Tov.
Fucked. We're damn just it. Fucked. We well, were tricked we every step
we
of the way.
We get a correction section next
my,
episode.
This is my second language. And then, so this is American saying Mazel Tov. I guess it's Mazel Tov.
Mazel. Okay.
But Mazel is her last name.
Right.
Right? So that's how you're doing. What
we'll go with Mazel Tov. If we're wrong, let us know.
Listen, I don't know, man.
Well, what did you like?
It's the I like that when she walked into the store, she was like, "This has so much texture," because that's how I am in real life. I was like, "Interesting. This is like a different way to describe." So I don't know. I really liked it.
Like an armpit smoked a cigarette.
Yeah,
I love the smell, like an armpit.
That was a great line.
That
was
I don't know why. And I really love that they had Barbra. She was leaving her whole life, and I like her outfit when she was listening to the music in her bedroom. Yep. I know it
love
looked very teenagery, but it was so gorgeous.
Yeah, pants.
And I love how purple they were, like the purple lights with the yellow background when they were eating the fries. That was very beautiful to me. And then I really did not like that fucking protest, especially because Ethan sucks. Like, I'm like, get out of here. He just goes to another woman. Like,
you know, he's one of our main listeners, so I would feel like,
oh no, both of them.
The actor that plays Ethan.
There's two little twin boys that play Ethan.
Yeah, they bark big fans.
Or triplets. Or
they share earbuds and listen to it.
I don't know.
So you give that a Schlemazel.
Yeah, I give a Schlemazel to that.
It would be great if she had, I mean, there's so many other ways to do it, but what if she'd been like, you know, like, I have something to say, and they're like, no, and then she's like, let me say it, and then she said a bunch of stuff. I mean, it'd be, you know, they could keep, they could still get it accomplished with still shutting her down, you know?
There's a lot of different ways they could have gone.
That's true.
So many.
In that scene.
What about you,
Oh, but
Kevin?
I actually like that a part of it was like her trying to talk to her dad about politics. I love that. because she's just like becoming suddenly more aware.
Oh, and Rose says, just let him win.
Yeah, just let him win.
Don't argue
with
him.
Again, work the system.
More evidence in favor of that interp.
I asked my grandma, like, how did you do it? He's always like, my grandpa was always asking for a coffee, and she's like this Italian man who's so always calling her.
Yeah.
And she's like, yeah, I just let him think that he was in charge. And I was like, damn.
Yeah.
Damn. that's like her working the system. And I thought it was so smart.
Totally.
What about you?
Already went.
He just went.
Me.
Where
me
were
too.
You?
What? No. What?
Wait, I thought it was me, then her, then you.
No, he already said a bunch of things with his mouth.
I understand that when I talk, it sounds like white noise.
It's not like
no,
that.
No, it doesn't. It's like
Alice went somewhere.
That's like
gray
that's
noise.
Like gray noise. No, I'm sorry. I went somewhere. It is okay. A little. I have been podcasting for 4.5 hours today, so.
We'll wrap
not
it up.
Not in a row.
I'm sorry to you. I love you.
I love you.
You are my buddy, and you are my pal, and you are important to me.
She's looking at Veronica.
And I'm looking slightly above Kevin's head right now, and it's just like really disconcerting. It's like I'm nodding off. All right.
Veronica, thank you so much for joining us
thank
on the show today.
Me. Thank you.
Joining in our maze of love, where can people find you?
Oh, well, you know, around LA, but my Twitter and Instagram are at Vero Videtta. So it's Videtta.
And you can be heard weekly and actually biweekly on our various podcasts
hey.
That we have together.
We have once
Trek in the City and the Trek in the City Patreon.
And the Patreon page.
It counts.
We discuss Star Trek from a female perspective.
Yeah. And you should go to my all-female sketch showcase the third Wednesday of the month at UCB Sunset. It's called The XX Factor.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
Go to that. Bring science. Scream for her when she gets on stage.
Woo!
And then
and observe.
And then be quiet afterwards.
And then don't make a noise for any other part
of
the show.
Yeah, just scream in the beginning.
It's really the best way to heckle me in general.
Yeah.
Just quiet.
Yeah.
Hell yeah. Alice, where can people find you?
Same as Veronica, at her same Twitter,
at Vera Videtta.
Alice Wetterlin on Twitter and Instagram. Listen to Treks in the City at Treks Fashion on Twitter. I'll be in Tempe, Arizona at the Improv coming up in March. That's my newest, my most...
your
the club
next activity
date.
After today.
And then also,
next
I will
activity.
Be at the... Fuck. Buckeye Bulldog Rescue in Columbus, Ohio on February 20 fucking something. It's on my Instagram. And it is a black tie event to raise money for a bulldog rescue that is great.
Wow.
It'll be fun.
Ooh. Black tie.
So Joe would fit right in.
So you can donate or come by, preferably.
That's so stupid.
Joel would
survive. I love
in.
It.
You know, his text from his wedding or
yeah,
something.
Exactly.
I don't know.
And bulldogs, you know.
He loves them.
You know how he is with dogs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He loves them.
Yeah, yeah, I saw that.
Why do they have Ethan? Just get a dog, guys.
I know.
Just get a dog.
The child hating people.
I know.
It's awful.
That's my favorite REM song.
Child-hating people, hating
child-hating people.
Child hating people, hating child.
Now let me ask you, Alice, do you think I already gave my plugs yet? Or
shut up.
What?
No, you didn't.
I'm keeping track.
At Kevin T. Porter, listen to good Christian fun every Wednesday. You don't have to be a Christian. You can be an atheist. We actually prefer the atheists to the Christians. Just kidding. We love everybody.
Wow. Very Jesus-like.
And what's your what's your Twitter?
At Kevin T. Porter.
Is that offensive?
Did you say it already? Oh my God, I'm horrible.
He just said it.
It's okay.
I'm losing. I don't know if I should even drive at this point.
Guys, let's close out with a song that they played.
I loved it.
By Ecstasy at the end of the episode. Not period accurate, but they love Ecstasy. They use like 5 different Ecstasy songs.
The credits are never period, right?
Yeah, I think most of the time they are not. That is true. Thanks for joining us, Veronica.
Bye. Thank
Here
you, guys.
Here we go. Dear Madam Baldwin. They love Ecstasy.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.